Welcome to ITE 1, Module 5, Part 4, the final part of this module. We'll be saying goodbye to
Mammoth
Module 5.
Module.
Seriously. You guys have been so much fun to discuss this stuff with, and I hope you've gotten a lot out of these four parts of Module 5 and have not gotten bored. I've sure had fun. Any questions on labs? Yeah, I know a lot of you haven't gotten your labs quite graded yet, but a few of you have gotten some of your Module 5 labs back. I am working on your labs because you have to do 10 of them. I've got to grade 10 of people's 10 labs, so it takes a little bit for this module.
Just a reminder, there is an accessibility document in three places on the server. If you are confused about lab 5.0.1, please read the accessibility document, or we will just get cranky. Secondly, when you are submitting your lab, please put the lab name and number in the subject line. That registry backup lab doesn't do it for us.
Yeah, which one's that? I don't remember all 10 numbers. I mean, I try to, but you may get marked for a lab that you didn't do, or not
book,
get a mark for a lab that you did
we
do.
Only have
it's
a lab
all lab
number.
Numbers in the gradebook.
And make sure you get the correct lab number.
Testing.
Yes.
Yep.
You want to turn that up
coming
a bit.
5.5.1 question mark is not going to work either.
Yeah. 5 point whatever it is. Oh. I don't know.
Handy hint, guys. Highlight the file name of your lab, press F2, hit home, shift, end, control C, go into your message and paste the file name in.
That's actually what I
in front of it all.
That's what I used to do, I think.
Yeah, that's what I always did, because I just pasted my questions into an email and sent it off, because there were different rules for how to do discovery labs a long time ago.
You might also want to attach your lab before you hit send.
That's exactly what I did with the
shift F2 thing. Yep. It's a good thing.
Thunderbird says, alert attachment keyword, attach file, alt A. And I'm like, yes!
Yep. Always good. Okay.
You can turn that off.
Oh no, it saves my bacon all the time.
All right, guys. Any other questions on labs or any of that? Cool.
I have a question about installation.
Go ahead. What's your question?
In installation, say like you're dealing with the Win XP, when does Narrator actually kick in? Is it at the time where they're asking for your time zones and all that?
Yes, that is the out-of-box experience if you do not have an OEM copy.
Technically, no, the OEM copy does not bypass the OBI. That was a will hack.
Oh, okay.
Technically speaking, the Narrator is only launchable once the GUI portion of the initial setup is complete and the out-of-box wizard is about to launch. That is to say, you cannot run the Narrator in the text mode portion of setup. However, if you've got one of our automatic XP blasted all and smashy disks, you just stick them in and then at the end you press Windows U and it just goes. So I'd be recommending those to most people doing XP installs. And if you would like the .inf file off our XP smashy disk to make your own, that can happen.
But be careful when you do that, because after that install, my computer, it didn't just lie to me about the time, it deceived me about the time zone. So the time was actually right, but the zone was wrong, and that caused issues,
you know why?
As Grace and Carrie find out. No.
Because your computer synchronized itself to an internet time server for the time zone that it thought it had, and it was actually set to the right time in that zone. When you do an unattended install,
wow.
The time zone will always be set for you. So, regional options, date and time, first thing you should do after you finish that unattended install. We could not set the time zone, but then the installer would come up and ask you, and you probably don't want that.
No, and it makes total sense. I just thought that when the time was actually right, I didn't think to shut the time zone.
I had my 19 hours out. I don't know what time zone I was set for, but it sure wasn't right once, and I just could not figure out why I was getting tweets from 19 hours ago when they were sent 30 seconds ago for like 3 days. It was good.
Now it breaks worse with OAuth. Quitter will not log you in if your time and time zone are incorrect. Thank you, Quitter support. So that was fun. But yes, we do have infiles and stuff for smashy disks, and I do have instructions on how to make them up if you want to make one up for yourself. But be warned, these are destructive. No data.
It's all gone.
And where do we locate those?
They're not up yet. I will let you know. I'm not actually giving you the ISOs, I'm just giving you the inf
Thank
files.
You. Yeah, I understand.
Okay,
Grace,
so Aiden...
I will need you to find another way. If you have to send me... I'm going to load Skype. If you need to message me during lecture because my Miranda and MiraSpeak are not being very nice, and so I will not be MSNable, so I'll go on Skype
okay,
if you,
I'll DM
if you need
you.
To send me something during lecture. Actually, I don't have Quitter up.
Oh, okay. Then I'll Skype you.
Trying to minimize distractions, you know.
Yep. Okay, so... what else was I going to say? Aiden has a story for you about his weekend project and how to not install Windows and what to do if you accidentally do some things incorrectly and how to fix it. And he did a really good job. So I'm going to let him talk about what he did this weekend.
Okay, just one second.
That's okay.
This is
of course
tell
I
and
get
tell.
You with him. Yeah.
with me, it was almost munch and tell. Okay, well, so I got a computer from the disability center, which was nice, and except that it had Avast on it, and when I tried to load Quitter, Avast wouldn't let it work, nor would it let Skype talking work. So after kicking it around with two exceptionally wonderful and talented and dedicated people, we finally decided to reinstall Windows. So I used one of those smashy disk things, got Windows on there, and had a lot of fun with drivers. When you install Windows, the advice to install NVDA first after Windows before JAWS is completely golden, because JAWS, without video drivers, JAWS likes to bring up the video intercept box, and while it'll work, it's just not the best system. It's better to have the video drivers down pat first before you actually install JAWS. So as soon as I got Windows on there, my first thing to do was get NVDA on there, and then I jumped the gun and did JAWS, and then I had to play with Driver Agent to find
We're in lecture.
To find all the extra drivers. Oh, okay, you're talking to someone else. So as it stands now, I'm sitting on the new used computer with everything working, drivers installed. It stopped lying to me about the time and the time zone. The time was right, but the zone was wrong, so finally the Quitter problem got fixed. And I have to fix a minor annoyance with Skype because it keeps bringing up a DirectX error that I have to deal with. But besides that, it was a very fun and informative weekend.
Did you do that with a installed disk? With the
I have it with an unattended disk.
Right. Okay.
A smashy disk, which is so a new
smashy
disk.
Yeah, smashy disk. I put it
it's
in.
It's
going to
be smashy
space,
disk.
I waited for about an hour. Yeah, it should.
How did you like Driver Agent? I actually just saw that last week when we were in the lecture, and I went and looked at the site. It looks pretty cool.
The site's very good, and the program is very good. Basically, all it does, it kicks you into a web page and scans your system. And then if you have credentials, you can download it. I think it's worth the money because it also has a... an offline version. So if I was going to fix computers professionally, I would. I don't know how it works, but I'm assuming there's a little there's a program that you put on the computer and you run it on the computer, and I guess it sends information to a flash disk. If this is, of course, if the computer can't get online, then you plug that into your comp, and I'm assuming it gives you a report of what files it needs. Good piece of program.
What you can do as well is have the person scan, and as soon as they scan, their scan will come up in your Driver Agent control panel, so you can access the drivers that have been recommended to this person from anywhere you are. So,
Grace.
Yeah.
That won't work if the network card's not working in the target machine, hence the offline mode.
This is true.
But it will work for the online, which is nice, because this is how my bacon, Grace saved my bacon, because my I wasn't sure exactly which files to download and which did what, and then it turned out the driver agent misdiagnosed one file. It gave me a Vista driver for some reason.
It gave you a file you didn't even need for a device you didn't even have. So that was really...
But, I mean, everything else was accurate.
Yeah, you will get a few wonky files sometimes, but so you've got to be prepared for that. But you should get the right files and all the drivers you'll need. You just might get something extra.
Now, before we finish off, what was the other thing you used, Aiden, that was absolutely golden that went and stuck lots of things on for you? Because I think we're flogging this one, too.
Ah, yes. Ninite.com/accessible. It was very nice.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice one.
At Ninite.com, you check the boxes you want. You press go, you press get installer, and you go have a coffee, come back, and everything you want will be installed for you.
Yeah, what was that again?
I mentioned both the accessible and regular ones, ninite.org. Or you can go to updateflash.org and it says, you can go to updateflash.org and it says powered by Ninite, and then you click that because nobody can remember how to spell the other one.
Yeah, and the only difference with the accessible one is that it has NVDA on there as its first choice.
And the Messenger, the old Messenger that everyone likes.
It has everything that is on there is promised to work with NVDA.
No, with screen readers,
and
not
if
NVDA.
If it doesn't,
I thought the NVDA for testing.
No, it's user submitted. Let's not claim that.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and you can save those installers.
No, this is for
program. No, this is for program.
And they're MSIs, so you press enter and it goes. It doesn't ask you anything. It just brings up a million progress bars and it goes from there.
It's silent. No toolbars, no nothing, and all the programs on there are free.
Well, it's actually silent unless when you press Windows M, because until you do that, there's a bunch of... bars. But after that, then yes, it's completely silent. It doesn't bug you for anything.
No, it's a shame they don't have a Mac version yet.
Possible. The fact that you've got a key in your password for every Mac install, it's never going to happen, Edward. Thanks, Mac.
Well, I guess you're right. You're right about that. That's very true.
The other thing, so we've got two sites we're recommending here. We're recommending driveragent.com. And we are recommending ninite.com. Driver agent is for drivers. That's why it's driver agent.
And it's paid.
And it's paid. It's paid. So if you don't want to buy a subscription to driver agent, you can do a free scan and rat down all the drivers by hand. Otherwise, you can pay for it and it will give you all the drivers. So that is an option. Ninite, Brian has Ninite Pro. Now, with Ninite Pro, you can do a bit more than the regular Ninite. You can actually download the complete installer. So what you can do is tick a few boxes, download the installer with all of the programs embedded in them, and then take a full-blown installer to your mate's place and run it, and it will install all the stuff on his computer. Very good for out in the field.
Without having to download them all each time.
Yeah, that's a paid service as well. But the Ninite free service is quite useful in its own right. It will put on Skype, CCleaner, NVDA, all sorts of things.
Defragmenters, messengers.
CD Burner XP was one
Media
I was going to mention,
because
that's a free thing to burn CDs under anything up to Windows 7. So no more
of
this.
Yeah, that's exactly what
Nero.
I did, actually. That's what I used to burn the ice.
And what version of Windows did you put it in?
XP.
Yep, I have XP.
It doesn't matter, though.
CD Burner XP is good from Windows 98 up, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. Good stuff for installing operating systems.
Does that include slip screening?
No. The CD that we've got already has Service Pack 3 slipstreamed into it, but we did that ourselves. There are instructions on how to do that by hand. Unfortunately, I think you had to get a service pack, didn't you, Aiden? Because it was only a service pack 2 disc, so we'll fix that for the next run round.
Yeah, I thought it did say, SP. Yeah, I did have to install SP3, yeah.
Yeah, we'll fix it.
Well, more specifically, I'll fix it.
Oh,
Yeah,
maybe
I
I
always
will.
wondered how to put that stuff in
Well, I
there.
certainly have no
I haven't looked in
complaints.
that for a
Like I said, my
while.
only problem is with Skype.
Actually, probably. Well, I'll fix it because you've actually got to put in the Microsoft bootloader, and I don't think Grace is sure
Fair
where
enough.
that is on the network, so.
One other question. How do you handle third-party sound driver software? Say, like you've got Windows Standard doesn't put in the sound driver that you need, like you've got a
I
Soundblaster
would.
card. What I do
I
is I
cheated
get
and
a.
used a USB headset.
Yeah, you use a USB headset
Yep.
until your that driver's installed.
And actually, with me, I happen to have two sound cards and two Ethernet cards on the computer, so that may be why Ninite
Ooh.
was, or the driver agent was confused, because yeah, I had duplicates of both.
Problem.
I'm not sure why the Ethernet card, though. That I found kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh, they decked it out.
There was another program, and I'll have to go take a look at talking about drivers. I think it backed up original drivers, and I'll have to go check and see what the name of that one was.
Yeah,
Another
there
one was
is one
Driver
that does that.
Detective, was another popular one. No, this one actually backed up so that you could
Yeah, I remember
restore.
that. I never found
Yeah, it
that
was
to
in an
work very well.
unattended. Oh, I used it lots of times, especially for
JFW Lite has it for the in the kit.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, it is in their kit.
So my recommendation to people is if you're worried about sound drivers, get a USB sound dongle for a couple of reasons. One is when you plug them in under XP, the sound will switch out to the USB dongle so that when your onboard sound crashes, you are safe. This is assuming you don't have a Braille display. And they're very cheap. You're
Yeah,
looking at
that's
five to
actually my
seven
other thing.
dollars.
Yeah.
That's or if you go to Blind Bargains, 30 cents. I don't know if that's still on, but
Yeah,
they
they
did
did
have
have.
one
I was
on for
going to
30
say
cents.
that.
30
I just
cents.
happened to see
Okay.
that a couple of weeks
Plus
ago, and I
shipping, I
thought,
think.
man, this
Yeah.
is great for ITE.
Yeah. Everybody should just have one of those because they are so useful.
Yeah, it was
What
30
for
cents.
headsets?
What is this sound? I don't know what that is. What is that?
Well, the 30-cent
But
one
put
was
it.
basically a USB thing that you plug in. Just looks like a small flash drive, and it's got two jacks on it, a microphone and a headphone jack. The headset that I have is a Microsoft LiveChat 3000, which I like. It's about $30, I think, or 40. It covers your ears pretty well, and it's pretty comfortable for me, and it does its job. And the other good thing about a USB headset, I was going to attest to the fact that you're sound crashing. My netbook has a handy little hotkey that mutes the sound. Actually, it doesn't mute it. It turns the volume down to zero, as my roommate found out. So
Oh, that's even
when I pushed
worse.
it, yeah, because I'm like, well, I can't even press space to fix it. So I had the headset out, of course, because it was on my desktop while it was getting fixed, and so I went to my netbook and I pushed keys. I want to turn this up, so I pushed that what I thought was FNF8 to turn it up, and it was the mute switch, and it muted the netbook. So I had to, the only way I could use the netbook for a few days was to plug in the USB headset. So they are very handy things to have, either the headset or the cheaper sound card that you could plug your own headset into.
Yeah, you'd have to keep in mind that you need
Oh,
your own
okay.
set of speakers for that.
Or a headset, which
Yeah,
you
but
have, because you're in Kavi, right?
now just one point here, with USB headsets and things. Be careful with some of the little USB sound cards. They're actually using a bridged amplifier. Now, some of you musicians will know exactly what I'm talking about, and the rest of you can just stare at me blankly. But if you put on things that are not a balanced load, you can actually burn out the amplifier chips. So just have a feel of your USB sound card, and if it's getting a bit warm, plug something else into it, because they're designed to drive headphones and things. They're not designed to run things like external speakers, and it is possible to cook them on external speakers, and that'll be another 30 cents plus shipping from Blind Bargains. But just so you know.
I'm gonna run and close the door, and then we'll start.
Yeah, I wondered how good that was, Aiden, when I saw that 30 cents. I thought, well, you get what you pay for, but you know, if it helped me from to be able to install a third-party sound card driver, then it would be worth every penny.
Oh, it would be great to have in a pinch. Now, of course, if you have an Olympus DIM 520, and I believe the DS series as well, they will act as
Yeah.
sound cards.
The DS does. I know it acts as a storage device and I think a microphone. I
You
don't know
have
that
to
it
switch
acts
it.
as a sound card.
Yeah, it does. It's in there. Audio class.
Is
It's in
it?
there. You have to dig for
Oh,
it.
audio
Okay.
class. All right, audio class.
Yeah, it's in the USB
Oh.
settings, yeah.
Yeah, but does any of this stuff work when you're in F8 or safe mode?
No.
No.
Oh,
none
no?
of it works.
Nah, no, you're done. Inaccessible. Sorry. Big buzzer. No way. Sighted friend.
Sound drivers are not essential, support. According to
yep.
Microsoft.
Yeah, we spoke
people,
about that
not.
Last week. Non-essential
people,
sound drivers are non-essential.
People,
actually, guys, you can't run 32-bit drivers in safe mode, and sound drivers are 32-bit. WDM drivers are 32-bit, so they're not going to go. Sorry, it's a technical limitation.
Oh, okay.
They're not trying to cut us out as such, but those drivers cannot fire up in... it's only that the network drivers has 16-bit stubs that allow them to run with safe mode with networking support, which is why you can't get a sound driver.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, it's a shame. You don't see the video card cutting out, though.
You do. That does not look great. They don't have amazing video quality. You've got VGA horror
it's pretty
mode.
Awful.
800 by 600? No, but it's 800 by 600. It's actually running
it
from the BIOS on the car.
480.
No, that was Windows 98. It's 8 by 6 at 16 colors. It's actually running from the video card BIOS, not from the operating system drivers. So, yeah, you do lose the video card.
It is not flash hot at all.
I'm still hunting up the details on how to get Braille support working in the Windows pre-execution environment. When I have the information on that, I will give you all the Windows funky stuff on how to do that. But if you don't have a Braille display, you're still out of luck. And it needs to be a serial one, so bad times.
Oh, what about a serial synth?
Don't know. We're looking into it.
Boy, that would be handy as hell.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got a bit left. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I knew I held on to that RC Systems double talk for a reason.
Okay, we can come back to this after class a little bit, but I did want to share that for those who go to bed early. But we are going to finish up Module 5. You will want to refer extensively to your notes if you don't understand the basics of the concepts I am going to bring up today. Otherwise, ask questions if you don't understand something. Alright. The Microsoft Management Console, MMC, allows you to organize... these management tools that we talked about last week, which are called snap-ins, into one place for ease of access. You can also add web page links, tasks, ActiveX controls, and folders to your custom console. You can have as many of these consoles as you wish, each with different names and different tools. You get to create a custom console in Lab 5.5.3. There are no questions on this, but guys, you should do it, because it is really cool, and it's something that nobody knows how to do. So if you do, you might find it useful later. So I would actually go through the exercise that it has you go through, even though you're not going to be answering any questions on it. Okay, Remote Desktop allows you to take control of another computer remotely. This process logs any currently logged on user off, so make sure that you aren't giving someone a nasty surprise when using it. Because their work isn't going to get saved, it's just going to go. It's gone. They're logged off, and they're sitting there staring at their computer in shock and horror. To use Remote Desktop with JAWS, you must have a professional license and pay for the Remote Desktop upgrade. Remote Desktop support is free in Windows Eyes, and I believe in System Access. Can anyone confirm that?
System Access has their own RIM thing. So I don't know
if
they would bother with Remote Desktop.
But they do have...
If somebody has SAMnet on the other end, it is free. But other than that, you have to pay for the RIM, which I think is $100 a month for 10 months.
Right, but I believe that's something else. I think there's actual Remote Desktop support, which is not that.
Where's Brian? He'd be able to tell us. Okay, we'll have to research that. Also, it's worth mentioning that apparently Ceratec now supports NVDA in their remote sessions. I saw an announcement the other day. The other thing you can do is, if you're nifty, if you've got NVDA firing up on login and you've got a high bandwidth connection between you and the remote user, you can actually log into their remote desktop, and then when NVDA fires up, you'll get the sound on your local computer and you can drive it with NVDA. Okay, so that's the free option. It's not pretty, and it won't sound very good, but it will work.
You cannot actually get into a remote desktop session using Windows XP Home. Any questions on remote desktop? Fantastic.
If you've
go ahead.
If you've got Pro, WinXP Pro, you can go into a home box, but not the other way around. So what you're saying?
Right. Yeah. No, you cannot start. You cannot access it. You can't go into one. You can go into home. Someone can remote desktop you, but you can't do it the other way.
Now, just one point I want to clear up here. Do not confuse remote desktop with remote assistance. Remote assistance is the thing where you ask for assistance either through Outlook Express or Windows Messenger. And remote desktop is the thing where you actually get access to the whole computer. You cannot use remote desktop into somebody's computer unless you have enabled it and forwarded the necessary ports. So don't expect to just go out and use this. It's not like RIM. It's not going to just go.
It's not tandem. It's not RIM. It's messy.
Windows has the remote control thing now too. The
yeah,
I haven't actually played with it yet. 7.5, you need
Windows
for that
only,
one.
I think it's only Vista and up.
Okay.
No. It's what you can control. You cannot control an XP machine from Vista, but you can go the You can't control a Vista machine from XP or something, but you can do XP to XP.
I
and
thought
stuff.
You couldn't That's do it. XP at all. I'll have to read.
Okay,
more about
we'll have to look
that.
At it.
It's in the help.
Okay.
Maybe we should play with that.
Any other questions on remote desktop?
Before anybody asks, VNC is completely inaccessible to us. Let's move on.
Nobody did.
No, I'm just killing that one before somebody goes, that VNC
I actually
really cool,
find it. I actually find it useful if I want to show somebody something on my Mac without switching the monitors around and it's a real quick something. So it could be useful if you need eyeballs. So anyway.
You can't use it. Okay, performance settings allow you to optimize the performance of your OS to enhance your computer's performance. You can change the size and location of your virtual memory so Windows does not use your primary drive for this purpose. You get to play with this in a lab in Module 12. That will demonstrate that very, very adequately, so I'm not going to go into it any further. Okay, has anyone here installed or uninstalled an application? Well, is anyone not? That's the question.
I do that? No, just kidding.
Okay. Well, who can tell me
just
what...
Just a side note, speaking of uninstalling, another program uh-huh. to recommend is Revo Uninstaller. I believe it's R-E-V-O Uninstaller. It uninstalls a lot of applications and checks for registry entries and things.
Be careful with those.
Revo's pretty safe,
Revo's
actually, Sean.
Pretty good.
It's not like Clean Sweep okay. or let's nuke it out of your machine while it's still loaded sort of stuff.
My dad used Clean Sweep on Windows 95.
Whoops.
If you know how to use it, it's good.
It
I think
okay
the one thing I can say about uninstall is try the Microsoft Add Remove programs first, unless you are... like Revo will actually fire up
or
the proper uninstallers.
Yeah, Unclean will too, from PC Mag. I use that as well.
And you can get Revo from Nanite.com. So there you go, one of the many things you can have installed for you. I was going to ask you, who could tell me what option we use in Windows to uninstall programs, but Carrie already answered us. Add Remove Programs is what it's called in Windows XP, and it is called Programs and Features in Windows 7 and Vista. You can also use this to install programs that do not have an automatic installer. Has anyone besides Carrie ever done this?
Nope.
I have.
Okay.
Most of the time you can run setup.exe even if there's no auto run.
Yeah.
I'm not
but
sure
apparently
when you
there
would
are
use
some
this.
Carrie's saying there are some programs that do not have a setup.exe.
Oof.
Well, not everybody wants to bundle the huge gobs of installer with their programs, so you just get this thing and it says, like, you know, install this from AdRemove Programs. It's just what the README says. It's smaller, lighter, easier. That's gone away a lot since now we've got the Nullsoft installer and that sort of thing, but it can happen. Basically, they encourage people to do things from AdRemove Programs because AdRemove Programs will automatically find setup.exe, and if you're sighted and don't know what type of icon you're looking for and don't have file extensions turned on, finding setup.exe can be a challenge, trust me. So telling them to stick the CD and go AdRemove
BMP,
Programs.
ICO, EXE, there's a lot of things that can be set up sometimes, so yeah, I can see that.
It's actually the one with the little computer on it. in case you wanted to know. There's one with a little folder. That's actually like the innie and that sort of thing, but it's the one with a little computer picture over it.
Good to know.
Yeah. Okay, some programs actually allow you to repair or modify them without uninstalling them completely. These options will be found in the program's installation or uninstallation wizard, which is basically the same thing. You press enter on it, and it'll say, do you want to modify, repair, or uninstall this? You click repair, it repairs it, and hopefully the program works right now. If it doesn't, well, you'll have to uninstall it and do some more clever things to make it go. Always uninstall programs using the /remove programs and programs and features applet to remove all traces of the program. These traces may never cause a serious problem, but why is it a good idea to make sure they are removed?
So it doesn't booger you up your registry.
Yeah, you're just going to have all this leftover gunk in your registry and on your hard drive, and you're never going to find it and know where all that hard drive space has gone, all the resources have gone. And basically, if you use add remove programs or programs and features, Microsoft will just get rid of it for you.
Most of it. You'd be surprised how much stuff is left behind, hence Revo and Installer. And yeah, I'll say the same thing about prefs on your Mac, too. Okay, just so we've got that out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
AppTrap is good for you.
Okay, we talked briefly about upgrading an OS earlier. Before doing this, you want to make sure that your hardware meets the minimum requirements for the OS and that all devices you will use are compatible. This process will attempt to keep all of your data and settings, but you really should back up before upgrading just in case. If you want to upgrade from XP to Vista, you must have Service Pack 2 or later installed on XP first. Have a look at Diagram 1 and know it well. You'll be asked a question on what operating system can be upgraded to other ones in the final. So know which is which. Know what operating systems can be upgraded to XP or Vista or any of that. And you'll be asked about it in the final. You can use Windows Upgrade Advisor to let you know if your hardware and software is capable of running Windows 7. If it is not, this wizard will tell you what you need to do to make your system compatible. Then you're going to run the advisor again and make sure you did it right, and you can upgrade. You can use the Windows User State Migration Tool, USMT, which allows you to create your files and settings from an old computer to a new one. This can be downloaded from Microsoft's website. I believe there's a question on this from your test, so the User Migration State Tool will migrate all of your customizations, files, and settings over to a new computer.
There's also the Files and Settings Transfer Wizard, which is so very much goodness that you should know about, because it's one of those tools that Microsoft actually did a good job on, and it does take all of the Outlook Express accounts and stuff, and no, they don't have to remember what their passwords were from one operating system to the other. Woot.
Now, would that transfer stuff between two computers, or is it just for operating system upgrades?
That's what it's for.
It's for operating system cross-grades and stuff. It's not for give me all the stuff that's on my netbook and jam it on my desktop, because you're not supposed to be using the two copies at once. It's transfer from one to the other.
But you can do... Yeah, you can transfer. It's not to sync them up. It's for a once-off transfer.
Kind of like the Mac Migration Assistant, which is also...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's only settings and user data. It's not programs. So you don't get all your old programs back with the User State Migration Tool. You just get the configurations, which would save you a lot of time if the install footprint is similar between the two computers. But if you've already got half the things set up on the other computer, I wouldn't do it.
Okay. We're going to talk about preventive maintenance very quickly. Just like everything else, your OS needs a preventative maintenance plan. This should already be part of your preventative maintenance plan that you've created. You'll want to backup, defragment, clean up, and check your hard drive for errors, as well as updating your OS and other applications, including antivirus and anti-spyware definitions. Also, remember to check for new device drivers regularly, as manufacturers release them often. If a driver does not work or introduces bugs, you can roll it back in the device manager. If any of your hardware has firmware, you will want to keep it up to date as well. Your motherboard is an example of hardware that has firmware that you may want to update. Always follow the instructions that come with the firmware to the letter, or you might end up breaking your hardware. It won't work, you can't do anything to make it work. Sad times.
This is why I would think you'd do firmware updates only if it's broke. Or if it adds functionality you desperately need. But firmware updates, unless it's a really huge deal, I would be really careful.
Actually, there are often cases where updating your firmware, like on BIOSes, and all of a sudden JAWS starts being able to suspend and resume, and it never could before. That's certainly something you'd want.
Yeah, there are lots of reasons to upgrade your firmware. It's not scary if you just follow the instructions. These don't have to be frightening times.
You probably need a UPS too, though. To be fair, yeah. That helps.
Another thing you want to do is have, and this is going to sound common sense, have our firmware update directions on something other than the device whose firmware you want to update.
Oh, yeah.
Put them on a note taker, another computer, print them out in Braille, whatever you have to do.
Luckily, not everything is as complicated as the book port to upgrade, so often there is an automated wizard. We don't have to flash it in Banks A through Q while singing Hava Nagila while dancing on one leg, spinning anti-clockwise.
The book sense of XT is horrible.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be scary. You don't have to be frightened if you're prepared. If you read the directions clearly and understand them, it shouldn't be a problem, and you should come up just fine. It's not this tear your hair out, horribly scary process. Just make sure you've got a good source of power, and you should be just fine. Many firmware upgrades are not reversible, so keep in mind when choosing to upgrade that you really want to do the upgrade, which usually you do. So, a service pack usually contains all of the updates for an operating system. Installing a service pack is a good way to bring your operating system up to date if you haven't kept up. So if you were being a little bit slack on updating and there's a service pack, it might be a good idea to install. You want to set a restore point and back up critical data prior to installing a service pack. Remember to always document any repairs or preventative maintenance that you do for easy reference and troubleshooting down the road. Make sure you have proper security on your computer. This includes keeping everything up to date, having antivirus and anti-spyware programs installed, and having either a hardware or software firewall. Every month, you'll notice that you get a malicious software removal tool from Microsoft. This scans your computer for malicious software and removes it. This is a good start for security, but it should not be used all by itself unless you're ready to clean up a mess. And I hope you have data backups, because you'll need them. If a security program does not start up automatically and needs to do so, add it to your startup folder, and it will. You may also be able to set the program to do so in its settings. You can schedule many preventative maintenance tasks to happen automatically. You do this using the AT command in the CLI or the task scheduler in the GUI. You have a really good lab that actually demonstrates the difference between these commands and how to use them. Actually, I think you've got two of them that you get to work on for scheduling tasks. So I'm really not going to go into this very much. This module also goes over system restore. The lab does a better job than I could ever do of demonstrating this to you. So I'm not going to talk about it too much here, but on the test, this is what you'll want to know. You will need to create a restore point when an application is installed, or a driver is installed, or you're doing an update. Actually, Microsoft will just do this for you most of the time.
Yeah, except for the time
you
really want it to, and then it doesn't.
That's what I was just going to say.
It takes restore points when you install critical updates that it thinks it needs to take up install points for. It does not take a restore point when you install WinZip. It's only system updates that cause the restore points to be triggered.
That's Yeah.
So take a restore point.
More and more programs are actually doing manual or doing restore points before their installations. I'm seeing it more and more, but still, if you're really in doubt and you think you need one, do it yourself. It's easy.
And then you know you have one. Okay. Remember, a system restore point backs up drivers, system files, and registry settings, but not application data. If you get rid of all of your email or delete that important file, system restore is not going to save you. It will, if you do, however, uninstall that program or install a program that messes your system up horribly, that is when system restore may help you. Backing up your hard drive is very important, as I have said constantly throughout this module and will keep saying like a broken record forever. Backup takes a long time, so we do not need to back up every file every day.
I'm not going to dob anybody in particular, but we have had some instances, and it seems that studying with Cavi causes this to happen to you, but we have had quite a number of students lose their hard drive when they've started studying with us. I think we might have had about 5 or 6 of them. And it's a bad thing, bad times, so back up.
I guess I lost access to my hard drive, but I had most of my stuff backed up on Dropbox anyway. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
You're pretty quiet. You want to move closer to your microphone if you can.
I think he's got a headset on. Okay. Oh, that's better.
Yeah, I do. I was just saying, too, that image for Windows is another thing I use to image the drive. My drive, and it actually took about 3 minutes to burn the DVD, which I found to be quite astounding. But of about 4 gigs of it, which was kind of nice.
Yep, we love image.
Dropbox is a great idea for labs. I just thought I'd mention that as well. If you have multiple computers, you can do a lab and it'll sync across. Or if you're on vacation in California and you're bored out of your mind, you need to do a lab on another computer that's somewhere else, you can, and then upload it and then fix it when you get home, and it's great.
It is. That's saved my butt many times.
Yeah, it is very important to have these backups. They are really helpful. Okay, so this is testable material. I'm going to go over the different kinds of backups with you. If you don't understand this, it's in your notes, and I'm seriously reading your notes word for word to you at this point. So, here. No.
Oh, no, we can't.
All right. We have a normal backup, also called a full backup. During this type of backup, all selected files on the disk are archived to the backup medium. These files are marked as having been archived by clearing the archive bit. Remember the attrib command? Yes, that's what the archive bit shows. That's where you're going to see it in the if you run the attrib command on a file. Copy backup. A copy backup copies all selected files. It does not mark the files as having been archived. A differential backup. A differential backup, it backs up all files and folders that have been created or modified since either the last normal backup or the last incremental backup. The differential backup does not mark files as having been archived. Copies are made from the same starting point until the next incremental or full backup is performed. Making differential backups is important because only the last full and differential backups are needed to restore all data. And we've got incremental backups. An incremental backup procedure backs up all the files and folders that have been created or modified since either the last normal or incremental backup. So it's going to back up in increments. It marks the files as having been archived by clearing the archive bit. This has the effect of advancing the start point of differential backups without having to re-archive the entire contents of the drive. If you must perform a system restore the last full backup first, then restore each incremental backup in order, and then finally restore the differential backup made since the last incremental backup. So complicated. Daily backups. These only back up the files that are modified on the day of the backup. Daily backups do not modify the archive bit.
Just a point, guys, if you want more information on backups than what's covered in the notes, please refer to our Thursday chat on backup and recovery that we did a couple of weeks ago, which will also refer you to where you can get image for Windows from.
Any questions on any of that?
If you want to know why this archive bit stuff is covered and stuff so extensively, it's because Xcopy and the DOS utilities can make use of the fact that the archive bits can be set and cleared, and if you actually are bothered, you can actually write batch files for free that will allow you to use Xcopy and Robocopy to back your stuff up and only back up the stuff that's been modified. We leave that as an exercise for the student.
Woohoo!
Don't knock it, it works.
Oh yeah. Is everybody good with that material? Because we're going to have a test if you are. Any questions on anything we have talked about so far?
Anyone still awake?
Yeah.
Hope I'm asleep.
Yes. Is it over yet?
No. It will never be over for you.
Aww.
She said just kidding. I don't think she keyed up.
Okay.
Okay. So we're doing a quiz, everybody in your chat window.
A quiz. Alright, first question. Which Windows operating system is capable of addressing up to 128 gigs of RAM? Is it A, Vista x86, B, XP x86, C, Vista x64, or D, Vista Professional? Choose now. Yep, you are right if you said C, it is Vista X64. Good job. All right, question number two. Which three steps should be performed to upgrade Windows XP to Windows Vista? Choose three. So this is going to be a yes or no. This is A, select the upgrade option. If you said yes, that's absolutely right. These are not in order. B, install Windows XP Service Pack 2. Yeah, you probably should do that. C, select upgrade to NTFS file system option. That would be a no, because you don't have to actually do that until later if you don't want to, if you're on a FAT32 partition already. D, download important updates to Windows Vista. Absolutely. If you are doing this correctly and you're on the internet and it asks you to download updates, you should take it up on it.
Oh, I thought you meant while upgrading, not after upgrading. Okay.
Most of the new installers have an option to download the upgrades as you go. In fact, when you upgrade to Windows 7, it asks you whether you want to connect to the internet and download updates that may allow your
That's
install
cool.
to complete.
And E, locate and run i386 WinNT from the Windows Vista DVD.
Well, we already got our three.
We've got our three. Okay. Number three, which two operating systems can be upgraded to Windows Vista? Choose two. A, Windows 95. B, Windows ME. Oh, sorry. Yep, I'm sorry. Yep, that's a no. Both of them are no. C, Windows NT. Yes, Windows NT can be upgraded to Windows XP. D, Windows 2000.
You mean Vista?
Yeah.
And which one are we upgrading to?
Vista.
Vista.
From?
From Windows NT.
Okay, the way you remember this, guys, is which ones can actually be upgraded. It's based on which ones are using the same kernel. So NT uses the same guts as Vista. That's how you remember it. 2000 uses the same guts
yep.
as NT.
So 2000 will be right. So you'll be able to upgrade from Windows 2000. Windows for workgroups? You know, somehow, I don't think so. Okay, which three items are Windows control panel categories? Choose three. A, user accounts. Good job, you guys have been studying your Vista 7, that is correct. B, command prompt. Oh, that's right. C, Windows Explorer. No. D, appearance and themes. Absolutely right. E, Microsoft Management Console. No.
Why is my jaw saying Ventrilo dot 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 Ventrilo dot 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 after
That is
every when every message
chat.
comes in? It's driving me absolutely insane. Yeah, I know. I'm in
minimize the
in
Ventrilo
the
window.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't have TTS turned on because I can't stand Sam.
Install another sappy voice. Espeak.sourceforge.net.
Get Mike and
net,
Mary
green.
From Edge, or you could get Mike
yeah.
and Mary from.
Yeah, Mike and Mary will
and
do.
Use those two.
That's true. Oh, I'm yeah. going to. I plan to install some good ones. I just haven't yet.
Okay, F, network and internet connections.
Thanks for that, Kerry.
Absolutely.
That's so much better.
Yeah, if you actually don't have Ventrilo minimized and stuff, it will actually flash it in the taskbar, which is why it says it to you. It's saying Ventrilo, you know, Ventrilo wants your attention. Ventrilo wants your attention.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
the dot 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 means.
Right clicking on the desktop of a Windows XP computer and selecting Properties enables the users to customize the desktop theme. What path and procedure enables the same operation on a Windows Vista computer? Is it A, right-click the desktop, choose Personalize, B, choose Start, Control Panel, and Device Manager, C, right-click the desktop, choose Graphics Properties, D, choose Start, Control Panel, Performance and Maintenance, choose Now. And A is correct. You're going to right-click it and pick Personalize, because it's all about your personal preferences in Windows 7 and Vista. What is the Windows Vista graphical pane that displays and organizes small programs such as clock, games, or web information? Is it A, sidebar, B, my computer, C, gadget organizer, D, desktop shortcuts? Choose now. A, it is the sidebar.
I wish it was gadget organizer. That'd be a lot more logical.
Yes, it would. A computer has Vista installed, but the computer has problems. The technician determines that a clean copy of the operating system should be installed. Which option should be chosen from the menu when the machine is booted from the Windows Vista installation disk? A. Setup. B. Repair. C. Upgrade. D. Custom. And in parentheses, advanced. It's going to be D. Custom advanced.
I know it.
But oh.
Why?
Because it's an advanced custom installation that's going to blow your files away. In other words, only advanced people should be running this.
It's going to blow it all away.
The Mac goes a step further even, because in the Mac you actually have to format the disk and disk utility yourself. So yeah, I figured Windows Vista was going to do the same type of thing. They don't want you doing it accidentally.
Yep.
It actually says on that screen, it says, if you wish to reinstall your operating system and retain all of your settings, please choose the repair option. If you wish to do a clean installation of the operating system, please select custom slash advanced. Please note that all of your files and settings will be erased. Some files may be recovered under C:\windows.old. However, you should not rely on this. Next.
If you repartition it, you will not be able to recover any files under that Windows.old. It's gone, because you've just repartitioned it. Which setting
is that? Why A it doesn't work?
Why what doesn't work?
Is that why setup didn't work?
It's going to automatically launch setup for you once you launch the CD. It's going to bring you into that setup wizard.
Yeah, the prompts are actually different, because under Windows XP it says to set up Windows XP now, press. It doesn't say that under Vista. The actual screens have changed.
If you need a refresher
so
on what those screens say,
screen.
Yeah, you want to look at those installing Windows files 5.4.2. Okay, which setting determines the order for which devices are checked for an operating system when a computer boots? A. The version or release of the operating system. B. The version of CMOS that is used to boot the operating system. C. The BIOS boot device setting. D. The NTLDR setting in the CMOS and the BIOS. Choose now. Hey, everybody said C, and everybody's totally right. Good job. Which Microsoft command is used to identify and view details about DirectX components? A. msconfig/d. B. regedit. C. msinfo32dx. Or D. dxdiag. Choose now. D is absolutely right. Which two conditions cause a computer keyboard to operate incorrectly? Choose two. This is so important because you can screw this up so easily. An accessibility option has been enabled. Is A. B. The master boot record is corrupt. C. The keyboard has a hardware fault. D. The cable has been damaged or connected incorrectly. E. Overheating has occurred because the power supply or cooling fan failure.
Is this a choose two or is this a...
Oh yeah, it was a choose two.
Oops.
Sorry. It's going to be A and C, because if you turn on sticky keys or turn on
or filter keys
one-handed
for that
mode,
matter.
you're going to get a surprise.
Technically, if the cable's damaged, you can get bad keyboard behavior as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what
Well,
C
that's
was.
A hardware fart. Fault.
Oh, okay, because it says the cable damaged or hardware fault.
Yeah, I guess.
Hardware fart,
the cable
yes.
The damaged yes. Or connected incorrectly as possible as well.
No, the hardware fart is when you move your keyboard across the desk and it kind of makes that, you know, skittery.
Yeah. Sound.
But. And JAWS actually messes up with sticky keys if you're not careful, because if you push the shift key to rewind or fast forward 5 times, it'll want to turn on sticky keys for you, so you have to go and turn that off.
So yeah.
Or use your arrow keys to do forward and backward.
So I'd go with C and D.
A,
C, and D. Unfortunately, there's no answer for this particular question, and I don't know why.
Maybe those hardware farts was a brain
Do
fart.
I need to have
Yeah, that needs to be this quiz needs a spot
All
check.
Right. Did this okay. I'll look and see if it's the one on instructors and fix it.
Which two statements describe why a computer operating system would fail to start after successful post? Choose two. A. The master boot record is corrupt. Absolutely. B. The keyboard has a hardware fault. That's, no, the operating system will probably boot, but you won't be able to use it much past the log
Actually,
on
no,
screen.
Guys, it says,
if it passes post.
It says successful post. So if the post has succeeded, otherwise the post
the
would
post
fail.
Detects the keyboard.
Well, actually, you can turn off keyboard checking, so I'm kind of with Aiden on that, but still.
Well, you won't be able to use the keyboard once you get to the log on screen.
That's
but
what
it'll
a mouse
boot.
Is for.
Okay, I didn't know the keyboard was actually part of post. I thought it was after.
Yes, it is. It checks to see if the keyboard's there. C. The mouse cable is connected incorrectly. No, you can boot without
actually,
a mouse.
That is sort of true if it's connected in the keyboard slot.
No, it's still going to boot.
No,
except if you had Windows 95 or whatever, it would say, you have no mouse connected. Are you sure you want to continue like this? And there was a checkbox to not bug me about that, but it would actually stop in the boot process and say there's no mouse connected. I don't know.
Yeah, it did.
I don't know if anything after did that.
No, I don't believe so. Because 98 didn't.
Yeah, it did.
Did it? Because I didn't have a mouse on 98 forever.
Somebody checked that box for you once, and you probably never knew about it. Because once you check the box, it goes away. But, yeah, it actually, the whole boot sequence freezes, and it comes up with a text screen going, look, you have no mouse present, or a GUI screen, sorry, it says, you have no mouse present, do you wish to continue? And then you tab once and hit spacebar to check the box, and then tab and hit.
Okay. D. The boot drive contains non-bootable media. Yes, and we have our three. Okay, that is absolutely correct. Number 12. In the installation of Windows Vista, what is meant by the phrase clean install? A. An installation where applications are uninstalled and their data files are cleared from the drive. B. An installation where an installation where applications that are loaded in XP are installed, but the data files are cleared from the drive. C, an installation where the registry is completely cleared of any entries that were created in the previous installation. Or D, an installation that does not preserve any information from the previous installation. Choose now.
Or E, an installation where Mr. Clean is put over the drive to ensure its integrity.
It's D. Okay. Spot check on number 13. We can't do that question at the moment. 14. What is the default desktop theme for a successful installation of Windows Vista Business? A. Max Clear. B. Steel Flash. C. Base. D. Arrow. Choose now. That is D. Arrow. All right. Good job, guys.
Business had Arrow turned off by default.
No.
The home ones had it on, but Business had it.
Because you still might want the funkiness that is Arrow.
It was a stupid thing with Vista. I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure Vista did turn Arrow on Business by default, and a lot of people weren't happy about it because they could get performance of their computer back by going in and turning it off. But yeah, the home ones had it off by default, and you had to go in and twiddle it to turn it on. It's odd. It's all fixed in 7.